KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum, we survey the presidential race once more, including the ongoing vying between New York Senator Clinton and Illinois Senator Obama for the Democratic nomination and the right to run in November against GOP Arizona Senator John McCain. We'll talk about yesterday's Democratic primary in Puerto Rico and the upcoming Democratic primaries in South Dakota and Montana that will finish out the primary season. And we'll assess Saturday's decision by the Democratic Rules and Bylaws Committee. All of that and more as we focus in on the presidential race with your calls and emails after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's forum. Yesterday, New York Senator Hillary Clinton won big in the Democratic primary in Puerto Rico in a largely symbolic vote that ironically managed to put Illinois Senator Barack Obama closer to clinching the nomination, just 47 shy of the required 2,118. There are still some 200 uncommitted superdelegates, and on Saturday, the Democratic Party's Rules and Bylaws Committee voted to seat disputed delegations from Florida and Michigan, but to allow only one-half vote for each delegate versus what the Clinton campaign sought, which was one vote for each delegate. Tomorrow, Democratic primaries in South Dakota and Montana end the primary season, and in this forum hour, we want to take stock of the ongoing quest for the Democratic nomination and discuss the presidential race. And joining us here in studio is Chris Lehane, who is a Democratic consultant, was a spokesperson for President Clinton and press secretary for Al Gore, and was with the campaigns, Clinton-Gore campaigns, 92 and 96. And welcome, Chris Lehane.
Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Glad to have you here. Also glad to have Alan Hoffenblum, who is the owner of Alan Hoffenblum and Associates, a full-service political consulting firm specializing in the management of Republican political campaigns. And he joins us this morning from Los Angeles. And we welcome you. Good morning. Alan Hoffenblum?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, good to have you. Thank you for being here. Actually, let me begin by getting your assessment. This is, after all, a Democratic primary. It might be interesting to hear, I think, for many of our listeners, what a Republican consultant has to say, and particularly in terms of, well, let's begin with Puerto Rico. I mean, this is not exactly, in most people's minds, a big factor because it's a commonwealth. It can't vote for president, but certainly has made a difference.
Well, looking on the Republican perspective, it just amazes me. The more races Hillary seems to win, the louder the Barack Obama supporters keep insisting that she gets out of the race. and I also noticed, by the way, that in the early part when Obama was on a roll, we kept hearing from the Obama campaign that, you know, the superdelegates can't go against the will of the people. But all of a sudden, I noticed they're not talking about that anymore because I think there's some uncertainties as to which of the two might actually get a majority of the votes. And, of course, there's confusion as to which votes to count and which not to.
Well, we're in assessing what happened in Puerto Rico, for example, it was Hispanic voters, once again, lower-income voters, over half the voters women. I mean, this is certainly where Senator Clinton's appeal seems to be. And from the subtext of what you seem to be saying is maybe the message is coming out the wrong way from the Clinton supporters?
I just don't know what's happening. I've been befuddled by the, you know, I don't have a horse in this race, and I'm a strong, you know, John McClendon supporter. I'm going to vote for him. In fact, I'm very glad he got the nomination. But I have never seen a press so hostile and trying to, I mean, you would think that Hillary Clinton was Huckabee or Ron Paul or something, rather than covering it a very tight race, which anyone could win. Even since New Hampshire, they've been reporting it as Hillary should get out of the race for the good of the Democratic Party. And it does befuddle me.
Some say misogyny. Would you factor that in your...
No, what I really think that's happening is that the more liberal elements of the Democratic Party have found their candidate. It is Barack Obama. They believe that he more aligns with their philosophy. And you know, damn it, don't take it away from us. He's our candidate. And that's basically how it's been reported.
Well, Chris Lehane, it was another defeat for the Clinton candidacy this weekend in terms of the Rules Committee. Are they going to go the mat on this, do you think, and take it to the convention or to August? What's going to happen?
You know, it's a good question. The comments that were coming out of the Clinton camp over the last 48 hours indicated or suggested that they believe that this will be coming to some type of closure, really. in the next
not
five.
Not Harold Ickes.
Not 5 to 7 days. But there are also some voices inside who are clearly arguing that you may want to take this a little bit farther. And look, I think I can appreciate both perspectives. You know, certainly by their count, they've won more votes than anyone else in this field. They've gotten enormous support from women. They've won, I think, 7 of the last 13 races, some by very convincing margins, in particular, some by very convincing margins in some particularly important swing states. And so why get out? On the other hand, obviously, Senator Obama has run a terrific campaign, clearly leading in the delegate count. By their count, winning the popular vote because they don't count Michigan and Florida, and there's justifications for not counting those two states. And clearly in the Obama camp, they want to begin to focus as much as possible on John McCain and get to the general election as quickly as possible. But if you're sitting in Senator Hillary Clinton's camp, I think you can understand why you may want to take some time before making a final decision on this. And look, I believe at the end of the day, Democrats are going to come together. They are going to unify, if for no other reason than George W. Bush is a particularly animating, galvanizing force for Democrats coming together in the fall and making sure that we really do have change.
Well, it's interesting to read the comments of Speaker Pelosi, who is the chair of the Democratic National Convention, because she says this argument from the Clinton supporters that the vote, popular vote number is what ought to be primary is wrong. And she's also said that she, it almost sounds like she's going to see to it. I'm not sure how exactly she would execute that, but see to it that this won't go to the convention, or she says the GOP will win.
Well, you know, I think it really does come down to how you want to look at Florida and Michigan. I think there's a much stronger argument that you should include Florida in your count than Michigan. You know, Hillary was the only name on the ballot in Michigan. There were a lot of issues in Michigan that I think caused some significant questions. But Florida is a completely different situation, which is it's got the largest turnout in the state's history for a primary. All the candidates were on the ballot. The voters of Florida ought not to be disenfranchised merely because the Republican governor and the Republican legislature in Florida decided to hold the election at a time that was not consistent with the DNC, Democratic National Committee's rules. And, you know, I was Al Gore's press secretary. I was on the ground in Florida in 2000. And I do have to say it sort of goes right to my heart, the idea that Democrats are going back to the scene of the crime in 2000 and having difficulty figuring out how they can make sure that the principle of one person, one vote, you know, applies in the Democratic primary. And, you know, if you're Senator Clinton, you're looking at this race and you're saying, well, geez, you know, we win Florida by an enormous amount. Michigan, which has demographics very similar to Pennsylvania, probably would have been a state, assuming all the trend lines had held, that she would have won anywhere from 10 to 12 points. You put those two things together, and whether you're subjectively looking at the count now or objectively looking at if you actually revoted those two states, she would indeed probably be the popular vote winner. And I do think that it has an enormous impact on the optics here, because neither candidate can really get to the number of votes needed to get the delegate count to become the nominee without the superdelegates. And the superdelegates account for about 20-25% of the total delegates, the pledged delegates cast. And those delegates, a lot of them are going to vote based on who they believe is the real winner. And so her camp is obviously making the argument that they are the legitimate popular vote winner. I think there's some flaws to the argument, but you can clearly see why they believe so strongly in that argument.
So why is it, in the words of Governor Rendell of Pennsylvania, Hillary Clinton supporter, these superdelegates haven't come around to support her candidacy?
Because I think both campaigns can make pretty compelling arguments about them being the legitimate winner. I think that's one of the real challenges that the Democratic Party faces. As I said earlier, I do believe Democrats are going to come together. There's going to be the galvanizing force of George W. Bush. We are going to be unified in the fall. But, you know, you have a primary process that really has not necessarily brought closure in terms of one side believing that they lost fair and square, the other side believing that they won fair and square. And I think it's particularly challenging in this situation. We have two historic candidates, one a woman, one an African-American. I think for African-Americans, this is the first chance to be president. For women, this is their turn to be president. And I think both of those values are really coming into conflict right now. I think it's understandable that you can see the viewpoints from each of those sides as to what's going on. But I think that's one of the challenges that the Democrats are now facing, which is the primary process has not brought closure in a way that both sides feel that there's real closure, that there's a real winner and a real loser. Now, as I said, ultimately, I think Democrats come together if for no other reason than that there is just an enormous imperative desire, energy for change, and I think that will override everything else, even hard feelings at the end of this process. But as a Democrat, it is painful to see us end up in the place where we are right now.
Chris Lehan is a Democratic consultant and was spokesperson for President Clinton, Press Secretary Al Gore. And Alan Hoffenblum is a Republican political campaign specialist, managing Republican campaigns, and is head of Alan Hoffenblum and Associates down in Los Angeles. Alan Hoffenblum, you get the sense here that McCain should be maybe getting a lot more traction out of this disunity, and he's not.
Oh, on the contrary, he's running about 10% ahead of what we call the generic ballot. If you just ask the voters, would you prefer a Republican president or a Democratic president, by 10 or 12 points, they say Democratic. But when you put him head-to-head to either Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama, it's nearly even or just, plus or minus about a couple, 3 points. And the reason for this is, as much as Chris would like to go against George W. Bush again, they tried it twice and failed. This time he's not on the ballot, and they're going against a candidate who's a household name, well-identified and well-known among most of the voters, and it's going to be a very interesting contest. No way can a Republican candidate win an R versus D contest this year because, my goodness, on a national level and here in California, the Republican Party is almost brain dead. But it's not going to be between just an R and a D. It's going to be probably between Barack Obama and who he is and where he stands and John McCain. And as much as they would like to run against George W. Bush, they tried this here in California with Arnold Schwarzenegger. They fell flat on their faces. I think they should come up with a better strategy than that in this national election.
Well, the strategy seems to be to, on the one hand, try to pattern himself after Arnold Schwarzenegger and appear to be branded in that way. But on the other hand, he has to get that Republican conservative base, doesn't he?
Totally no. Neither did Arnold. There's going to be around 15% of the Republicans, particularly those who are social conservatives. They tend to be voting basically on their feelings relating to issues such as abortion and gay marriage and things such as that. But what John McCain has to do is the same thing. What McCain has to do on a national level is the same thing that Arnold Schwarzenegger campaign did here in California. Put together a voting coalition that's unique to him, and not necessarily the same coalition that was able to elect George W. Bush twice to the presidency. They're two different people, and they have two different appeals. If he just tries to run a George W. Bush campaign, he'll fail miserably. But I don't believe he has any intention of doing that.
Well, you mentioned the Democrats went against President Bush twice and lost. Of course, some thought they won the first time, but that's just a footnote for Chris Lehane's sake here. But I'm curious to get your response to this idea that, well, Arianna Huffington said it on this program just about a week and a half ago, that John McCain is just a Trojan horse for George Bush, and certainly that's the way the Democrats are going to try to make it seem. But Bush's poll numbers have never been lower, so obviously to be associated with George Bush right now is not necessarily a very positive thing for the McCain campaign.
No, and he's not going to run that way. I mean, I also agree with Chris that after the convention, the Democratic activists are going to unite. Those who go to state and national conventions and almost make their livelihood off the Democratic Party, they're going to unite and get behind the more likely candidate, Barack Obama. But what that should be a concern to these Democrats is Barack Obama is perceived as the ultimate nominee. The press has him winning, no hands down, and Hillary keeps winning primary after primary after primary. You're going to have to wait to Oregon before, Barack is going to win again. And I'm not so sure that those constituencies, the Latinos and the working stiffs and what we used to call the Reagan Democrats, I wouldn't take for granted that they're going to automatically follow Barack Obama.
How do you see it, Chris Lehane?
Well, not surprisingly, I have a very different view. I actually have my refrigerator theory to this election, which is that given the trends out there, the fact that you have a sitting president whose numbers are lowest in recorded history, the fact that 80% of the country thinks we're going in the wrong direction, the fact that the economy is down, the fact that people are not particularly happy with the situation in Iraq would suggest that the Democrats could nominate a refrigerator. In a refrigerator, would they be able to win in this election?
There was a football player who was known as Refrigerator.
Yes, Refrigerator Barry. Yes. Unfortunately, the Democrats are blessed with two great candidates who are far superior than the Refrigerator. You go back historically. There's only been one time since the end of World War II that the party in power for 8 years has remained in power. And historically, the single most important factor out there after one party has been in power for 8 years is really where the relative job approval rating of the sitting president is, because these elections often do become a referendum on change. Do you want to continue to go in the same direction or go in a different direction? I think given the fact that this president's numbers are sub-Nixonian right now, the lowest in recorded history, is a huge millstone against around any Republican's neck. And you look what's happened. We've had three special elections in congressional districts, which were all districts that Bush won by 10-plus points in 2004 and 2000. And in all three districts, Democrats won. Democrats actually won relatively handily. That suggests that there's enormous winds of change blowing out there. And as for Senator McCain trying to distance himself from President Bush, I think that's potentially problematic. He's endorsed his tax proposals, which is essentially the Bush economic policies that have taken the country to where we are today economically. He's a strong supporter of the war in Iraq, has talked about the notion that if it's conceivable that soldiers may need to be on the ground there for 100-plus years. He's really tied himself, you know, hip to hip to Bush over the last several years, particularly in going about getting the nomination.
All right, you're talking like the good Democratic
consultant. I am. You hit the button. I got on my soapbox. Sorry.
Indulge me for a moment, because I want to ask you directly. If you were, say, advising, and, you know, this is like living on the planet Pluto for you, perhaps, but if you were advising candidate McCain, what would you tell him would be in his best interest against the Bush? I mean, just completely to dissociate himself from President Bush?
I think that, again, recognizing that the Republicans could potentially put up a combination of Gandhi and the Pope, and this would be a particularly hard election for them to win in. If I'm Senator McCain, I'm going back to my true roots, or the roots that he has always held himself out to be.
As a
maverick reformer. I mean, he got in trouble in the Republican primary when he moved away from that and became the Republican frontrunner and went before the very same groups that he's going before right now. And in the process, while looking like your normal conservative Republican, undermined the central brand that made him of interest to people, the straight shooter, the maverick, the reformer. And I think for McCain, what he really needs to do if he's going to have a shot at this, and again, he could do all of this and it may not make any type of a difference because the winds of change are blowing so strong, but to connect his personal courage, undoubted enormous personal courage that he showed with what he went through in Vietnam, connect that to his public service record as a man who's a reformer, a straight shooter, a person of courage, and talk about the fact that he is the true reformer in this race.
And also someone who can work bipartisan, like he did with Senator Kennedy.
He actually has a track record that he can potentially point to on that. Now, I happen to think that even if he does all of that, that this is just an election where the headwinds are so difficult for him to overcome that it's going to be virtually impossible to get there by November.
I'm going to give out the phone number, and then I'm going to ask Alan Hoffenblum what he thinks about those headwinds. But you're free to join us. In fact, invited to do so, whether you're listening to us on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite. We'd like your thoughts not only about this ongoing struggle for the Democratic nomination, but we're talking about the whole terrain of the presidential election, and you're free. Feel free to ask any questions or make any comments that suit you. You can do it now. In fact, toll free. Joining us at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. And lines are open and available to you. Again, it's toll-free, 866-733-6786. Or you can simply send an email to forum@kqed.org. And what about those headwinds we're hearing from Chris Lehane, Alan Hoffenblum?
Well, Chris has pretty much laid out the strategy I think the McCain campaign is going to follow. And this idea that any Democrat can win is somewhat an insult to the electorate here in the United States. I think the voters got to remember the majority of the voters in this country are not Democratic. If you add the Republicans plus the Independents, they maintain a majority, and it's really going to be the Independents and the swing voters, and what I call soft Democrats and soft Republicans who are going to determine who's going to win this race. It's not going to be based on the opinions of hardcore Republicans or hardcore Democrats. And what I think we have, by the way, is what we truly need, and I hope we're able to get, you know, and there is a significant contrast on many issues, you know, that between Barack Obama and John McCain. There should be a vigorous debate in this presidential election on the war in Iraq, not so much how we got there, but what we should be doing now to extricate us from Iraq and which way was the best, both for the country and I could say for the world. And I think on tax policies, we're going to have Barack Obama, who wants to raise capital gains, who wants, you know, to suspend the tax cut. You're going to basically have a contest between a liberal on tax policies and a fiscal conservative. And these are important issues to be discussed. And the idea that the McCain, other than to say he's just George W. Bush's third term.
Well, one of those big issues may be something that's just surfaced recently, Chris Lehane. That is Republican presumptive nominee McCain raising the whole specter of a nuclear Iran in a speech to a pro-Israel group just recently, and once again chastising Barack Obama for willingness to meet with leaders of Iran and other enemies of the United States. This looms, and it looms also, I suppose, in another way, which is that Obama, one could argue Obama hasn't been tested in battle as a warrior, and John McCain has. And so the Republicans, to their great advantage, have used security and have used the military as a fight that has to be fought. 3 a.m. phone call has been used in the Democratic campaign as well. But this could be certainly something that could swing voters and is already showing some evidence of swinging voters.
Well, look, I think that, you know, what's happened over the last, you know, 5+ years in Iraq on the ground with what our soldiers have gone through, what the country has gone through, you know, is the analogy to what the Republicans went through with the Great Depression. I think the Republicans have effectively jumped the shark when it comes to the party having a brand and credibility on national security issues. For 6+ years, we've been on the ground there. The situation has not gotten better. In fact, it's arguably gotten worse. Country is less secure today than it was before we went into Iraq. Situation in Afghanistan still has challenges. We're unable to do some of the things that we may want to do in Iran right now because of the situation in Iraq. Bin Laden is running around making more videos than an MTV producer. and so I think for the Democrats, you know, to borrow the George W. Bush phrase, sure, bring it on. Let's have a discussion about where we are in terms of our national security. Let's talk about where Bin Laden is. Let's talk about the fact under George W. Bush's watch, Iran has taken huge steps in terms of arming itself with potential nuclear weapons. I mean, this all happened under Bush. This didn't happen under a Democrat. And I think the country really is in a position where it wants to go in a different direction. It wants change. It's come to the conclusion that the policies of the Republican Party just haven't worked the last 6 years.
Well, we're getting a preview maybe of what's going to happen once we do have a Democratic nominee. But let me get back to the race for the nomination with you, Alan Hoffenblum. Just how much importance do Montana and South Dakota have? They're coming up tomorrow.
No, I don't know. The press has pretty much made up their mind who the nominee is going to be. And it's going to be, and by the way, it's not going to be decided by the voters because it's going to be a dispute, as we've already been talking about, as to who really did get the plurality. You're sounding like R versus D talking about Florida, who really won Florida. Well, who really won the popular vote? It's going to be the superdelegates. They're the ones who are going to make up their mind because there's not enough primaries left, you know, to win it purely by the primary system. So it's going to be the superdelegates, the political activists, you know, the people like Chris, I don't know whether he's a superdelegate or not, you know, who are going to make the ultimate decision, which is why Hillary keeps hanging in there, because she's trying to convince about a dozen or so of these so-called superdelegates that she would be the strongest candidate. By the way, I concur. I think Hillary would be a much stronger candidate against John McCain than Barack Obama, because, again, Barack is untested. He's almost a pig in the poke. No one really knows that much about him.
So why does Rush Limbaugh want Hillary to be the candidate?
Oh, who cares what Rush Limbaugh wants? But anyway, it just mystifies me. But again, I'm going to go back to what I said. If Chris believes we're going to win this race, you know, McCain's greatest weakness is he's running as a Republican. I'll be the first one to admit that. But there's more to the man than just that. What I find amusing when I look at Barack Obama's campaign, what he's attempting to do is out McCain, that he wants to reach across the aisle, that he wants to put together coalitions. But of the two candidates, who has the battle scars? Who worked with Ted Kennedy in immigration reform? Who worked with Hillary? Who worked with these Democrats? One of the reasons Rush Limbaugh disdains John McCain, actually, you know, does not like him, is because he doesn't believe he's a loyal Republican. Whereas Barack Obama, you know, I'm going to bring it up again, the National General's ranking as the most liberal senator, has no record since he's been in the United States Senate that he's done anything to work on the other side of the aisle on any of the critical issues that have been before him while he's been an elected senator.
This is a good preview of the general election. We're coming up on a break, though, and when we come back, we'll find out your thoughts not only about the primary in Puerto Rico, but also about the Democratic rules decision, which may, as we said, continue to carry on despite the half-delegate rule that they came to, and, well, the battle for the presidency. Again, toll-free number. Feel free to join us. We'll come to your calls when we return. It's 866-733-6786 or by email forum@kqed.org as we continue with Chris Lehane, Democratic consultant, and Alan Hoffenblum, largely Republican consultant. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're taking a look at developments in the contest for the Democratic presidential nomination and actually talking about what may indeed be a lot of the campaign positions as we move toward the general election. We're talking with Alan Hoffenblum, who is owner of Alan Hoffenblum and Associates, and that's a full-service political consulting firm that specializes in management of Republican political campaigns. He's with us this morning from Los Angeles. Here in studio, we have Chris Lehane, spokesperson formerly for President Clinton and formerly press secretary for Vice President Gore, and now a Democratic consultant. And let me go to your phone calls. And let's, Kathleen, begin with you. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for the topic, and thank you for taking my call. I'm quite amazed and actually appalled that there's not more outrage at the way the DNC conducted itself over the weekend. They took the testimony in the morning, and then they stated during that testimony when questions came up that they'd hold all of those questions, they'd look at them in the afternoon by the committee members. And then they took 3 hours plus behind closed doors, and then they come out into session and they go direct to the motions without any discussion. So the public doesn't get to see anything about what they had had planned to do or any of the questions or issues that the committee members were going to bring up. And I'm equally concerned about the fact that they go ahead and they take and they reduce the vote by half. This really, to me, harkens back to days when, you know, people who didn't have property couldn't vote, people who, you know, got only 3/5 vote, or blacks couldn't vote, or white women couldn't vote. I mean, it really, they may have all of the rules in the world, but I don't know whether or not all of that was very legal. And I really hope that somebody in those states really would take it as a legal issue and go forward and really look at it. It appears to me also that it's a very, very arcane system to be where we're at, and then to be trying to drum people in or out of a race at this point in time. We should allow the electorate, the people, to have their voice, and not to have all of these other people coming in to try to sway or shift the, or determine the outcome.
Well, Kathleen,
let the electorate have their say.
Forgive me, but certainly your comments reflect a lot of the comments that we've been hearing from those in the Clinton campaign. And what, Chris Lehane, what about
this
criticism?
Well, I'd like to make one other comment.
Yes, please.
I am not concerned about it because of Senator Clinton or because of Senator Obama. I am concerned about it as a citizen who votes. Anybody, if they can do that in Florida and they can do that to Michigan, that sets precedence that they can do that any other state at any other time. Any of us should be concerned about that. If I were voting for presidential candidate, if I were voting for union rep, if I were voting for a school, high school president, I would want my vote to count. I would not want anybody to half that, you know, to take that away from me or to allocate it to somebody else. So I think we all should be concerned that they have done this, not because Obama comes out a little bit ahead and Hillary Clinton comes out less. I think we all as voters should be concerned about that.
You're concerned about this in terms of enfranchisement. I understand.
Yes.
And let me hear what Chris Lehane has to say.
I think she makes, I mean, I expressed earlier my frustration with the current process, and I think she makes some extremely eloquent points. I think it's indefensible that the Democratic Party has ended up in a situation where you're potentially disenfranchising voters in two enormous states, putting aside the fact that just from a pure political perspective, why are you disenfranchising two of the most important states in the general election? And I think
who deserves most of the blame? Is it Howard Dean?
Well, look, I think that the Democratic, I think that there was a lack of vision by the Democratic Party in seeing that this race was going to go on. I think most people assumed that this race was going to go like the last 3 or 4 cycles, which is after the first couple, after Iowa, after New Hampshire, maybe after a couple more, that the race essentially ends. And that clearly was not the situation this time around. And I think it's pretty important to remember exactly what happened in Florida. I mean, I said earlier, we're going back to the scene of the crime in 2000. For me, it's particularly painful. I was there on the ground. I was with the Gore campaign. And for Democrats to be potentially in a position of disenfranchising voters in some form or fashion just seems to me a situation we never, ever should have ended up. And it's also important that when people look at this to recognize the way the calendar is set is really dictated by Iowa and New Hampshire. They exercise enormous control over the campaigns, over the DNC, because if you don't go along with what Iowa and New Hampshire wants in terms of making sure that their states continue to be going to order that they've gone historically, you risk basically putting a big black mark next to your name if you're a candidate running in those states. You really put yourself in an untenable position. And so everyone basically has to – there is a sort of a – and the electoral extortion element to all of this. And then you have to look in Florida, in addition to the fact that Iowa and New Hampshire were really imposing this calendar on everyone else, you then have the Republicans in Florida, despite what the DNC is saying, putting this on the calendar. And then you have 1,000,006 people on the Democratic side, none of them, or at least the vast majority, who knew nothing about this stuff, who showed up thinking that they were voting, thinking that they were casting one person, one vote on that day, and then to suddenly wake up and find out that their vote doesn't count. It's an absurd situation. It will be interesting to see if anyone decides to challenge it legally. I'm not a constitutional legal expert on these particular areas, but there does seem to be some valid grounds for questioning what has happened. And hopefully the lesson extrapolated from the Democratic Party is that we really need to get our house in order when it comes to this primary process. First of all, we should not even have superdelegates. Superdelegates are inherently undemocratic. They're an insider game. You ought to have a situation in this day and age where it's one person, one vote, popular vote, winner wins. And I would just say on the Hillary side, you know, they have come to this argument over the last probably 5 or 6 weeks. I do think of both campaigns, and in particular her campaign, had begun this argument back in January that we need a real popular vote winner. If you're not going to count Florida and Michigan, let's revote those states. That you would have been potentially put yourself in a position where indeed you could revote those states, and indeed the superdelegates.
The whole problem: who's going to fund the revote?
Well, you know, there were some folks with deep pockets who offered to fund it, and I think at the end of the day, in a campaign that's raised $500 million between the two campaigns, raising $30 million or so to pay for democracy is something that certainly Democrats could have afforded.
You want to weigh in on this, Alan Hoffenblum?
By the way, it's very interesting. The Republican National Committee also penalized Florida and Michigan for the early primary, but nobody cares because it was determined early. What the Democratic National Committee needs to do is stop the a combination of either a caucus state or a direct primary by the registered voters of that party. That can create a lot of inequities. Like in Texas, Hillary Clinton got the majority of the vote of those who voted, Obama got the majority of the delegates because he won the caucuses that coincided. It's a very strange system. Also on the superdelegates, here in California, there's only about 4 to 6 superdelegates that will be joining the McCain delegation, and those are people like the governor, the state treasurer or insurance commissioner or what have you, and a state party chair. We don't have this group of superdelegates here in California. You have to have been a delegate to the person who won the direct primary, so they are McCain delegates that are going, you know, to the national convention. But I think it's the caucus. It's the variance of both of we don't have this on the Republican side, but the Democrats. Some states have caucuses, which depend to be individuals, you know, who are the most politically active, and others have direct primaries. And that's why there's the confusion as to who really got the popular vote.
And we go to Ed next. Ed, you're on. Good morning.
Hi. I just wanted to first re-emphasize something that your commentator just said, that the Republicans also penalized Florida and Michigan, and nobody's talking about that. No one is talking about that, and most people aren't even aware that the Democratic punishment is very similar to what the Republicans did, and nobody is up in arms protesting that. But my purpose of the call is that fundamentally the election has not changed between Clinton and Obama since February. In fact, each primary that Clinton wins puts her further back because she isn't winning by the percentages she needs. Her candidacy since February has served one purpose and one purpose only: to weaken Obama, and she's done so by appealing to the Democrat, by appealing to victim emotions and victim mentality, and basically taking a playbook from the Republican playbook. The Republicans have often run on a victim mentality. The whole liberal press, liberal media, we're victims of the liberal media. Hillary has adopted that play. Look at me, I'm a victim of sexism. Well, you're looking at the candidate who was ahead by $100 million, who was the presumptive nominee for an entire year, who simply did not run an effective campaign, who time after time made bad decisions.
And let me jump in there because I want to get Alan Hoffenblum to respond to what I think is the gist of what you're saying here, because he had said before he can't understand how the media has been saying Obama is the one that should be crowned here in light of the fact that what Ed says, particularly in terms of Hillary kind of fighting this uphill battle, chasing Obama. Thoughts from you, Ellen Hoffman?
Yeah, she's fighting the perception among those who are the most strongest within the Democratic Party that they want Barack Obama to be the nominee. And by the way, if Hillary should some way get the nominee, boy, there's going to be chaos within that national convention. What's going to happen to the African-American voters? What's going to happen to what I call the,
Nomination. Obama earned the nomination.
What's that?
Obama earned the nomination.
We're not talking about who earned it. We're talking about who won it. Both of them, in my opinion, have earned the nomination. Both. In fact, I think Hillary Clinton right now is the strongest campaigner of the three. She's out there fighting like crazy. Of course, she's talking about the difference between herself and Barack Obama. That's what the voters want to know. But let's give credit. Who has been winning the Democratic primaries lately? I mean, it's unbelievable. Barack better start winning something other than superdelegates if he wants the perception that he, for some reason, earned it more than Hillary. And I don't know why I'm defending Hillary so much, because I don't want her to win either as far as November.
Yeah.
But it's been very obvious to me watching as one who's not emotionally involved in either one of those candidates that the party is very badly divided, and it's not going to be as easy to patch it up as I think as some activists are hoping.
And maybe the kind of divisiveness that we're hearing from Alan Hoffenblum suggests that it's not as bad as you suggested before, Chris Lahane? For the Democrats?
I'm glad to see Alan fired up there at defending Hillary. That was impressive. A couple of things. First of all, I think the protracted primary is actually great for both candidates. I think they're both better candidates now than they were when the process began. And really, the back and forth in the primary is like thumb wrestling compared to the steel cage death match that will take place in the fall when there's Democrat versus Republican. And just take a look at the
You don't accept Senator McCain and Senator Obama both saying that they want to run a very clean campaign, and Senator Clinton saying, I'm actually good friends. I have been good friends in the Senate with Senator McCain.
I think the comparison between what the primary looks like and a general election looks like will be night and day. And just take a look at the Reverend Wright situation, which is much better for Obama to have dealt with that in April and March of this year than to be dealing with that in the fall of 2008. And so I think the primary has really served a purpose. But I do think at the end of the day, Democrats are going to come together for a lot of reasons we've discussed, that this is a change election, and folks really do want to take the country in a different direction. And I think that Bush really does serve as a galvanizing factor, bringing Democrats together. And look, Obama is a tremendous candidate. The earlier caller talked about Obama winning. I mean, he certainly has run an exceedingly impressive campaign. He's really been the first candidate who began as an insurgent since Jimmy Carter, who has then gone on to become the nominee, and I think he deserves an enormous amount of credit for that. And
you know who else ran a terrific campaign? Mm-hmm. George W. Bush.
George W. Bush I would argue that George W. Bush began as the front runner and had a lot of institutional infrastructure supporting him, and his dad was the former president, whereas Senator Obama is his first time out, not making any major mistakes, putting together the type of money he did, energizing the type of voters he did, and potentially completely changing the paradigm, both in terms of the money he raised and the voters he turned out, deserves enormous amounts of credit for what he's been able to do.
May I respond to that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, first of all, George W. Bush. The reason George W. Bush was able to get the nomination in the year 2000 is because there were a lot of Republicans, particularly many here in California, which is, where Republicans don't do very well. unless they're named Arnold Schwarzenegger. But George W. Bush served two terms, as governor of Texas. And when the first one was a big upset, by defeating Ann Richards, who was perceived as a very popular governor, and then got reelected by a sizable vote. And during his reelection to Texas governorship, he picked up almost half of the women, and he picked up something like almost half of the Latino votes. And two voter groups, the Republicans on a national level, were doing very poorly. And he also had a reputation, which is kind of ironic now, as one who worked with the Democrats in the Texas legislature. So there are things in his background where people knew and experiences that appealed to a lot of institutional Republicans, thinking he would, in fact, be the strongest candidate.
Bruce, join us. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. Thanks very much for taking my call. But as I was waiting, I listened to the previous caller, and I think he's right on the money. Obama has run an effective and successful campaign. You know, I started out as a visceral supporter of, in my gut, I thought Hillary Clinton would be just a wonderful candidate, someone who I could really get behind. And she's run a very poor campaign. And now I have a visceral dislike for her. I was a real supportive of the Clintons. I supported their museum, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But she's run a very poor campaign. The point that I was really going to speak to John McCain, but I wanted to point out something. You know, Icky said that Obama made a strategic mistake by not leaving his name on in Michigan. And are we to presume then that the Clinton strategy was to leave your name on in Michigan, but to say to the public that that doesn't count for anything, and then to come back and to fight for those votes? Now, maybe that's good strategy, but that's not the that's old politics, and that's not what I'm wanting in a candidate. And I think that's how Clinton began to lose the battle. And the issue of the victimization is very, very important to consider how they are using that. She used it right up until yesterday in Puerto Rico so that she can get money back into her campaign. And that's not the president that I actually would want to have in the White House.
Well, Bruce, I appreciate your comments. I want to get a response, though. Before you go on, I want to get a response from Chris Lehane, because the Clinton campaign advisor, Harold Ickes, by the way, has been mentioned twice here, and I just want to say that he is advising Hillary Clinton. Bruce Lehane advised her husband, and... Want to respond to that caller's comments?
Chris, sure, and I know Harold well. He was
the deputy. Bruce was the caller. You're Chris.
Harold was the deputy chief of staff when I was at the White House. I mean, the caller raised a number of interesting issues. As alluded to earlier, you know, I think there's a distinction between Florida and Michigan. I think there's a pretty compelling case to be made that the Michigan vote should be counted. They should be counted in total. Everyone was on the ballot. It was a historic turnout. I think Michigan is a less clear argument. Obviously, at the end of the day, the best resolution would have been to have revoted both of these states. I think for the Clinton campaign, they made a tactical mistake probably early on, which is that I think they should have begun arguing for the revote way back when, because it would have given them the moral high ground to begin having this discussion. Otherwise, they end up in the position that Bruce just alluded to, which is that it looks like you're trying to game the process to benefit you as opposed to actually putting in place a process that really is consistent with small d democratic principles. That's why I think from day one, folks should have been talking about revoting these two states. It would have given you a much stronger place to actually engage in this Florida-Michigan discussion. But, you know, one thing I will say about the Clinton campaign, you know, the Patriots lost to the Giants in the Super Bowl. Patriots played a great game. Giants just played better. You know, Senator Obama has run a really good campaign. He had a dynamic in this race that was different than prior Democratic insurgents, which is that he had the capacity to be able to pull in a significant portion of the Democratic establishment in the primary, and that is the African-American voter, which historically had not been there for insurgents, whether it was Bill Bradley, Howard Dean, Bob Kerry, Gary Hart. All of those insurgents ultimately lost to the establishment candidate because the establishment candidate maintained the establishment voting pool in the primary. In this particular race, once Obama won Iowa, it became clear to the African-American voter, justifiably, understandably, that they had a first real shot of having a black president. And you saw an enormous shift in the Democratic primary establishment voter after Iowa. And that made it extremely—
primarily Caucasian, yes, state, but it was also a caucus vote.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the going forward. So you start, yeah, to go to the South Carolinas and other states in the South. Suddenly, Obama was able to take the insurgent voter, what I jokingly referred to as the latte-sipping Democrats or upper-scale, college-educated voter who had been with them. And those voters historically had been with the insurgent candidate in Democratic primaries, whether it was a Dean, whether it was a Gary Hart. But he was able to take that group, combine it with the African-American voter, and also bring in this huge number of young people. And, you know, that was a dynamic that you just haven't seen. But in particular, being able to pull a core part of the Democratic establishment, the African-American voter, into the insurgent candidate just made this a completely different dynamic than you have historically seen with the quote-unquote insurgent candidate. And, you know, as for Hillary, I do agree that her experience message was not the best message to have out there in a change election. You know, halfway through this campaign, she actually got to the exact right message, which really worked for her, which is that she is a fighter for change, reflects what she has done for 20-plus years. It reflects her personality. And by the way, once she began talking about the fact that she was the fighter for the middle class, fighter for the working class, she began to rack up wins at a pretty impressive amount. Texas, Ohio, Pennsylvania, West Virginia. We've seen her, you know, run the table in a lot of these key states with that message. Now, I think if she had begun with that message, we may be in a very different situation today.
Well, let me read some messages from some of our listeners along the lines that we're talking here. Michael writes, please remind your listeners that U.S. citizens have the right to vote in general elections, not primary elections. Primary elections are specific to parties, which have voluntary membership. The Clinton candidacy has cynically elevated this issue, despite the fact that Harold Ickes voted for the sanctions, and Senator Clinton declared that the primaries would not count. Senator Clinton had huge name recognition advantages in both states, and Senator Obama had no opportunity to campaign and communicate his message. This issue has been blown way out of proportion, energized Senator Clinton's flagging candidacy. That's from a listener. Another listener named Jody says, I think the folks inside politics, meaning I believe our two guests, are missing the pulse of the people. The popular vote really matters to our sense of democracy. Obama is just playing the same old game from where I sit by focusing on delegates. I bet a lot of folks will consider McCain now. He seems reasonable. I'm not saying he is, but he seems so. And this craziness within the Democratic Party is losing folks. Sigh. Here's Steve, who says, listening to the comments regarding disenfranchisement of voters in Michigan and Florida, I think two important points should be made. First, this has been made. The Republicans have also reduced the votes of delegates in these two states by half. Second, where was the outrage regarding disenfranchisement when the DNC decided to strip the delegates in the first place? All the candidates are on record to agreeing to not seating any of the delegates, so the DNC actually awarded delegates at the meeting yesterday. Finally, I find it interesting that you have two commentators on today, one who is a former advisor to the Clinton campaign and the other Republican strategist. Republican strategy has been to support Clinton's weakening of Obama for the past several months. Where's the representation for the Obama supporters? At least no one will accuse you of the so-called bias for the Obama campaign. Well, you know something? I've been accused of bias for both campaigns. That may come as a surprise to some of you. Let me go to more of our callers. Carol, join us. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm just wondering why we can't get rid of the superdelegates and why there isn't a concerted effort to make sure that that is dismissed within the popular vote is exactly what we go by.
Well, let me go to Alan Hoffenblum on this. Alan, what do you think?
Yeah, I think they should get rid of the superdelegates. You know, in these primaries, you know, they are party functions, but for the most part, they're paid for by the taxpayers, regardless of party. You know, we taxpayers pay for the California and, you know, the presidential primary last February. No, we Republicans don't have these superdelegates. You have to been out there working for the candidate who won the that state's nomination. So I would think the Democrats would want to do the same.
You would think so, but Chris Lehane, you would think that, well, after the elections you've been involved in, that maybe there would be some change in the Electoral College. There was certainly a lot of talk, but there haven't been changes. Maybe the same type of thing with superdelegates?
It may very well end up that we keep the superdelegates. My hope, as I mentioned earlier, is that as a result of this flawed process, the Democratic Party will take a step back, really reevaluate how the primary works. I do think that
hope, but not necessarily expectation.
Well, I mean, remember the folks who sit on the DNC obviously are folks who themselves are superdelegates. I think they obviously benefit and enjoy the process of serving in that position. I agree with the callers, with the people who sent the emails. It's inherently undemocratic. In this day and age, how we don't have a one-person, one-vote system through our primary seems inexplicable and indefensible. And, you know, the Democratic Party historically has stood for the concept of small-D democracy. And I think the Democrats really need to go back to their Andrew Jackson roots and get back to that, particularly in the primary process.
Speaking of Andrew Jackson roots, you saw a lot on Saturday of I'm thinking about with the populist roots of, you know, people coming into the White House in great numbers and expressing their emotions. And you saw this in that Rules Committee meeting. I mean, people were wild with visceral responses to there's one woman particularly who has been played over and over again named Harriet, who was yelling, screaming, and so forth, which I think probably is not good for the candidacy of Hillary Clinton. But the fact of the matter is this hits people very deeply where they live, and I don't know what, you know, to sort of cosmeticize and say that there's not going to be potential for great divisiveness within the party. I mean, the kind of divisiveness that could be, well, shall we say, more than significant, conclusive.
Yeah, well, as I said, indefensible, the system. And look, I was, as I said earlier, I was on the ground in Florida. I mean, I saw folks, and West Palm Beach who were Holocaust survivors who somehow had their vote cast for Patrick Buchanan or didn't have their votes cast at all. I mean, I've lived this. To me, as a Democrat, I just don't understand how our party can ever be in the current position that it is in terms of disenfranchising voters. And so, you know, I really, I feel that pain very intensely.
May I make a comment?
Yeah, actually, Alan, I was going to ask you something. I want to hear what your comment is, but you stated, since Chris is talking about Holocaust survivors and voting in Florida, and Florida could be very important in that sense, you stated that you think a lot of, and this will make that emailer convinced that you're in the Hillary camp here, but you've stated you think Jewish voters are going to be very reluctant to vote for Obama in the kind of numbers that one would expect from Jewish voters.
Yes, there's a lot. By the way, I happen to be Jewish, and I talk to my Jewish friends all the time, but particularly among the Orthodox and conservative Jews, there is some lot of anxiety about Barack Obama vis-a-vis his position on Iran and the position on Iraq, and there's a lot of talk on that. But one comment I want to make, because I'm not really a Hillary person or a Barack Obama person, but in politics, as Chris knows, we have what's known as situational ethics. Something is good or bad, right or wrong, depending on whose ox is being gored. And I'll guarantee you, for some reason, Barack Obama carried Florida and Michigan, they would be pounding on a table demanding those two votes be counted. So both of them are basically applying a position what they think is beneficial to their campaign, not necessarily what is right or what is wrong.
Is it situational ethics or is it just political pragmatism?
That's the same thing.
Okay. From Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, Selma, join us. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I have been very, very appalled by the Democratic nominating process, and as of Saturday, it was the final straw. I wrote Chairman Dean and resigned from the party, and in the fall, I will not be working for the Democratic Party nor contributing, and I will be voting in Hillary Clinton's name as a write-in for the president because she is the best qualified person. Thank you.
Thank you. She also won in that state, Pennsylvania. We've got a caller from San Jose now. Tim, you're on.
Yes, the banks had signs at teller windows, money at teller window, worthless. What would people trying to do business think? Now, those states, Michigan and Florida, they used the machinery of the state, which cost huge amounts of taxpayer money to conduct that primary election. Isn't that a fraud?
Would you call it a fraud, Alan Hoffman?
I call it bad judgment. It's basically because when the rules were put together for the primary season this time, everybody thought it would be over by the first Tuesday in February, and it just got out of hand. And there's a lot of things that need to be fixed.
Yeah, I think
we say this every 4 years, and but it seems to never get fixed.
We're coming to the end. Chris Lehane agreed. Things need to be fixed, and some bad judgments were made. At least we can get agreement from the two of you on that. Huh?
Absolutely.
Well, we have come to the end of the hour. I want to thank Chris Lehane, who is Democratic consultant, and Alan Hoffman-Bloom, who has been specializing in the management of Republican political campaigns. Thank you both for being with us on Forum this hour, and thank you, our listeners. We are appreciative of the fact that you're with us here, and we're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. I want to extend thanks to Senior Editor Dan Zoll, our producers Kevin Guillory and Tina Larberg, and now Judy Campbell aboard as well. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.